humanization is such a big part of the pet food industry. And over time, I think the idea that pets are members of the family is pretty well established in the market. And in some of our research recently, we've seen that kind of go a step beyond. So, you know, almost more than a member of the family, but and especially over the pandemic and the aftermath of pets almost as you know, soulmates or really special companions. And with that comes a greater interest in, I want to do, you know, the best I can for my pet.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Corbion's Alga Prime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Biorigin, your partner in yeast ingredients for palatability, immunity, and nutrition. Complete solutions for every pet diet. Learn about the benefits of working with Schooler. Visit schooler.com/pet. That's schooler.com/pet. Young Generation Oral and Gut Health Solutions with antibodies from egg yolk. IGY technology. Research-driven. Pet-approved. For more than 20 years, Biorigin manufactures high-quality yeast-based ingredients through a sustainable biotechnological process, guaranteeing full traceability from the crop to the bowl. Through specialization in the fermentation process, Biorigin brings the right solution for specific nutritional, palatability, and health appeals, such as gut health, immune system, skin health, weight control, and more. Biorigin's products are natural origin, non-GMO, and certified sustainable by Bonsucro. Biorigin is your partner for high-quality, yeast-based ingredients to add value to pet foods worldwide. Learn more at Biorigin.net.
Hello, welcome to a new podcast from the Pet Food Science podcast series brought to you by Wisenetics. My name is Jan Sokodolski. I'm here an associate and professor at Texas A&M University. And I'm here to bring you the latest insights into the pet food industry and pet food science. So get ready to expand your knowledge and stay ahead with today's episode. And it's my great honor to welcome John Owens here. He comes from the Mintel Research Group. It's a market research company. John is an associate director for the Food and Retail Reports. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me.
And today we're going to talk a little bit about market trends, new pet foods. What is the new trends? Especially, we're going to focus a little bit on fresh food, refrigerated foods. How do they influence? And so, John, what I like to do is a lot is let our guests introduce themselves a little bit. As I said, we have a huge, wide audience all the way from companies. We have the researchers. We have also like grad students. So what was your story? Where do you come from? Your education, how to end up with market research, and what are your highlights?
Yes, well, I've been in the market research world, and specifically with Mintel, for about the last 15 years. And Mintel, our core product is reports that look at product categories kind of from every angle, including the what the products are out there and the market share, but very importantly, the consumer research and the consumer perspective and what they're interested in, what they want and why. So, and it's an opportunity for me as an analyst to kind of bring it all together to tell a story about different product categories, integrating what's happening in the market with what's happening in consumers' minds. And so I spent a lot of time writing, and I got into this world through the advertising business. I spent quite a while in advertising and realized what I enjoyed most about that world was the analysis and the really digging in deep to what's going on and what makes categories tick. So that's led me to market research. And over time, I've covered a wide range of topics, from household products to sort of lifestyle related reports. But in the last 7 or 8 years, I've really focused in on retail and grocery products, and pet food happens to be one of the categories that I've been following very closely. So I've sort of looked at pet food both from the pet food standpoint, but also from the people food standpoint, and to understand kind of some of the links and similarities that we see between those two markets.
You said you're an analyst, so what is your background from from this academic background or from the study, then how did it actually evolve? How could you use that?
I have a writing background. I was an English major in college and worked a lot on the newspaper, and that kind of led me to advertising.
Okay.
And the advertising kind of got me into the analysis side. So it's been a step, but in a way, and our reports are quite lengthy and involve a lot of writing. So it was the writing piece that's been the thread through all of this that has sort of kept me interested and kept me doing what I really like to do best.
Can you tell us a little bit about Mintel Group, your company itself, and how do you actually initiate some of the research you're doing?
We work with a wide range of clients. And in any particular industry, it might include the retailers that serve that industry, the big manufacturers, also the suppliers, the companies that are making the ingredients or have the packaging, even, and a whole wide range of things. And we write reports or do reports that obviously are topics of interest to those companies, and we'll start every reports with kind of trying to get at what are the key issues, what do we want to ask consumers about, with a little background knowledge of the category as well, and decide what's on behalf of our clients, what do we really want to dig into to help them understand what's going on in the market and why.
Mm-hmm. So practically, where do you start? Kind of, so if somebody, let's say a new company says, I have this new pet food category, so where would you start like that?
I think it all goes back to the consumer for us and what they're, what's driving consumer interest. So we might look at it from a product standpoint. What are the products out there and how are those serving needs? We have a database that we can track pretty much every product that's introduced in big product categories. So really a lot of different ways in to look at a category. And while much of what we do is syndicated in that we'll sell our reports are available to a wide range of clients, we also do custom work as well. If a particular client is very interested in a specific topic, we'll work with them to figure out the best way to get the answers they need.
And just from personal interest, so how do you actually, are you sending out surveys to customers? Are you focus groups? Or how does it ultimately, progress?
A little bit about both. We do consumer surveys. We have our team we work with who's specifically, once we get into research, I'll work with our research team to design a survey that gets at those issues and questions. And then we have it taken out to the field. So we'll talk to maybe for any particular product category about 2,000 consumers and make sure that everything is the each sample is weighted to be representative of the market that we're looking at, so we can project it out broadly and go from there.
Okay, great. So today's topic mostly focus is going to be on fresh food, refrigerated foods. Can you give us a little bit of background? Do you know where it kind of started? Well, who was the driver of this, the consumer, the market, and what is the trends then?
Yeah, they've been around quite a while, and existed as kind of as in the DTC world, and they where subscription services where you can get fresh food delivered directly to you on a regular basis, and they've had success over time. I think what's interesting to us and why it's become a particular topic these days is they've kind of broken out of that mold, that model of being a very niche service to people who really want to give their pets something that they feel is the best possible food, into breaking out of that and really more into the mainstream. So we think it's interesting that they've gone beyond that DTC model, and now they're doing national advertising. A lot of the brands are out there on TV, and they have a presence at retail at all the same pet food stores and pet stores that are selling conventional food as well. So they're having an impact on the broader market as well.
In this market, what are the most notable trends? So which kind of pet food are we looking at?
It's all, I guess, kind of wet food and very close to the source. So, you know, the whole idea is that it's less processed. It's, you know, often promoted as human grade and differentiated from the market in that way. But recognizable foods that you might almost see as food, people food as well. So they kind of tap into that notion that we've seen across the market. You know, humanization is such a big part of the pet food industry, and over time, I think the idea that pets are members of the family is pretty well established in the market. And in some of our research recently, we've seen that kind of go a step beyond. So, you know, almost more than a member of the family, but and especially over the pandemic and the aftermath of pets almost as soulmates or really special companions. And with that comes a greater interest in, I want to do, the best I can for my pet. So add to that some of the things that we've been seeing in the people food market, like concern about ultra processed foods, which kind of spills into the pet food market as well. And interestingly, it's something that the fresh food brands have kind of picked up on and really play into. So their marketing talks about, takes kibble, which is certainly the sort of the standard of the category. By our research, 80% of consumers use kibble to one degree or another in their feeding regimen. And it's certainly cost effective and it's convenient. But I think that its ubiquity makes it an easy target for the fresh brand. So there's in their marketing, there's a little bit of what we've called kibble shaming going on, where the talk of presenting kibble as sort of overly processed, unappetizing, even to put the fresh products in the best light. And at least to a certain degree, 2/3 of our pet owners will not along to the idea that commercial pet food brands are overly processed. So all of the people food issues around ultra processed have kind of fed into the perception that these fresh brands are really trying to take advantage of.
Let me take a quick step back, and we're going to come back to this kibble shaming a little bit. But you said, just numbers, you said 80% is the market share kind of kibble at the moment, you think? Or
The actual market share probably is a little lower than that, but it's still probably over half. But 80% of pet owners, and it's pretty consistent for both dog and cat, use kibble at least part of the time for the regimen. So pretty much everybody uses kibble to one degree or another. Mm-hmm.
So how is roughly the market share about all those fresh food diets now?
It's hard to measure because it mostly falls out of kind of the traditional measured channels that we see. But at least a year or two ago, when we were kind of digging into it based both on our research and sort of secondary research, we estimated that's about 1 or 2% if you look at it on a volume basis or feedings basis. But because it's at such a cost premium, it might be as much as 4 or 5% of the market at this point. And it's certainly growing. But again, that's an estimate. But again, I think what we see and are sort of predicting will happen a little bit is that yes, it will grow, but realistically, it's so expensive that it's always going to exist to some degree as a super premium niche. but its presence in the market, especially as it's come into the mainstream more and available at big box pet stores and on that in advertising, is that it's really going to have a ripple effect on the broader market.
Okay, let me come back to that one later. What does it mean long term? But coming back to, you know, what drives this fresh food? Is it a little bit, obviously, people want to do the best? What's the best and so on? But who is the driver of this? I mean, research is still kind of lagging behind, I would think, at the moment. I mean, that's my impression. So is it more the perception? Is it the research? Is it the marketing? Do you think, or is it a combination of both?
We've seen, at least initially, many of the brands are simply purely working on the idea of fresh is better. Fresh is implicitly healthier, and regardless of what the actual nutritional research might say, the impression that it's something that it's food that you would eat yourself in effect, so it somehow must be healthier for your pet. And more recently, some of the brands have kind of gone beyond that and have found ways to sort of provide more justification for fresh beyond just the idea of fresh is inherently good. So that's one trend we've seen as brands have presented themselves, that fresh it's been tested and it's better in different ways. And also, from a sort of more anecdotal standpoint, many of the brands really tell or allow their users to tell stories of life-changing benefits of the product and dogs, especially, say, rescues that came in that were unhealthy that were brought back to good health through the product. So there's a lot out there that really talks about how they can make a big difference, as well as just allowing you to feel good that you're feeding your pet something that's fresher and better.
So it's a lot of anecdotal too, though. Not right. Great. Okay. So what do you see kind of now the future? You said before, I mean, the trend's going to be there, but obviously the challenge, the hurdle is the premium price for it, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Right.
But what do you mean with the ripple effect, and where do you see other product categories falling behind? Not behind, in this trend?
Yeah, I think it really kind of hit us pretty hard when I was at a pet store and I was looking at a big display that one of the fresh brands had set up that involved the products as well as video and the promise of these life-changing benefits for your pet were front and center. So as a pet food shopper, being in that store, going to the kibble aisle, but seeing over here this product that's implicitly saying you're not making the best choice anymore, I think that kind of puts the conventional brands, if you will, sort of on the defensive, or they in a position where they really kind of need to defend their turf to reassure consumers that they are indeed just as nutritionally sound and a good option for your pet as these fresh brands.
Mm-hmm. That's a great question. So, how does the consumer, since you're on the consumer research side, how does a consumer is able to actually differentiate what the science says and what's the anecdote say? Because I think it's a challenging thing, but I mean, how would a traditional company prove, what the expectation would be?
Right. It's difficult. There's, I think, it's still a certain degree of skepticism among consumers. We've asked, do you believe everything you see, and they don't necessarily understand the specifics, but it's creating the impression. We also see that consumers are more attuned, and it's in part feedback from brands that have become more specific in promising, say, functional health benefits, that functional health benefits, whether it's protecting skin and coat or more energy or immune support, all these different expressions of functional benefits have become more important to consumers. They've also, as consumers have become more conscious of their own pet's sort of health and well-being, are more likely to, than just a few years ago, to say that their pets are suffering from any number of issues. And we don't think, we think that's more of a pet owner perception and pet owner consciousness about their pet's issues than perhaps the actual, you know, actual conditions the pets may be suffering. But it all feeds to interest in, I want to do the best for my pet and be more specific. We've seen an increase in brands talking about gut health, for instance, which we think is very an interesting one tied to what's going on the human side in food, and this kind of recognition of the multifaceted importance of gut health. So we see that on the rise in pet food as well. And, you know, from a marketing standpoint, it sort of serves as a way that brands can even umbrella sort of the many of the functional claims in one, something that might be easier for consumers to understand and put together, that, okay, if you're helping my support my dog's or cat's gut health, I can see how that's going to, I now, because of what else, what I've brought in from understanding my own diet, I know that supports immunity, supports, you know, other benefits as well.
Oh, that's great to know. I mean, we know that the gut plays one central role with all the gut-brain axis, skin axis, and so on.
Right.
So, how do consumer evaluate health, their perception, right? So if they look at the animals, what is there? What do they most often look at and say, okay, that is actually what I think my animal gets healthier because of the diet. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
I think it's lack of perceived issues that, you know, healthy weight, and it's emotional as well. It's interesting that we've seen an increase in consumers and pet owners talking about having their pets suffering from anxiety or even depression. So it's very much of, you know, what they see going on with themselves and you know, projecting onto their pets as well. So someone who's more conscious of mental health issues, for instance, will be more conscious of mental health issues with their pets. So again, all very close to how they perceive their own health and wellness projected onto their pets.
Maybe like two questions is, want to follow up on this one a little bit. So who is kind of the where's the information source where consumers trust the most? I mean, is it a veterinarian? Is it some, you know, where do they get the information they trust? What do you think?
It's gotten broader. And while the veterinarians might once have held the prime role, just as has happened in human health, people take things into their own hands a little bit more, do research online. And so the vet is one voice, but there's certainly more voices as well.
And so, and maybe the last question, because we are coming to the end of our podcast, is how do you see the future in supplements then? Because I think obviously, you know, the consumer is really, really, really puts a lot of emphasis on the health of the animals, right? So I think there's another broad category is the supplements market, right? Where do you see going there?
I think there's sort of a lot of opportunities for supplements and kind of the merging of a lot of categories that exist just outside of food. So whether that's treats and toppers in particular, which we've seen a lot of growth in, and the kind of work not only for appetite appeal, but also as supplements for adding a supplement for a specific issue that your pet is solving or your pet is having. So the idea of customizing and having a more involved feeding experience, which might involve a mix of kibble and wet and toppers and supplements in some form or in some mixture, is kind of an opportunity. I mean, I think one opportunity brands have is to help consumers put it out, pet owners put it all together, you know, to think more as, or present themselves more as a feeding system within the same brand is potentially an opportunity, as opposed to going to the pet store and buying your treats from one brand, your pet food from another, and the supplements and toppers from another. Still, if their brands could kind of help consumers navigate that to end up with a regimen that's nutritionally sound and balanced, but also draws on all these things and is more involved and customized for the pet, I think is a big opportunity.
I think that's a very interesting insight, because I know that many years ago, a lot of companies, especially pet food companies, wanted to have this one perfectly balanced diet where everything is inside. So we actually don't want to add supplements because the consumer may think that our diet is not good enough. And so now you think the consumer is on the other side, that actually they want additional supplements on top of the diet.
Right. And I think it's both to address specific health issues, but also to make that feeding experience more involved or more engaging. So the feeding experience is more sort of an act of love and care for your pet, as opposed to just dumping the kibble in the bowl and walking away.
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. ICC Animal Nutrition, adding value to nutrition. Trow Nutrition, the science of ingredients, nutrition, and blending. Kemin Nutrisurance is your pet food and rendering partner every step of the way. Trusted ingredients, proven performance. Wilbur Ellis Nutrition. We partner with a purpose. Corbion's Algaprime DHA P3, the algae-based omega-3 DHA to boost brain, cognition, immune system, and well-being. Adding it to pet food is easier than ever. Cut out the middle fish and go straight to the natural source to enjoy all the benefits of omega-3 DHA. It's better for the planet with zero impact on the ocean and low carbon footprint, and it's easy to use. The highly concentrated biomass powder is suitable for multiple applications. Learn more at corbion.com.
Oh, that's very interesting. And so just maybe a very final, out of interest, the toppers. You know, that's something that we don't often think about it, but I heard this now from you, but also before, that toppers seem to be very important for the consumer.
Right. And we've, again, track what consumers are telling us they're buying. And in just 3 years, toppers have gone from about a quarter of pet owners saying they use them occasionally to a little more than a third. So, in the world of big packaged goods categories, that's a huge, a huge increase. It's a little hard to tell exactly what that's eating into, whether that's eating to treat sales or food sales, but the ability to kind of customize your pets, what goes in the bowl, toppers feed into that, and sort of an amorphous category, because it can mean broth or raw bits or any other number of forms that aren't quite treats and aren't quite food, but kind of fill that middle role. Mm-hmm.
And again, it comes back from the consumer wants to prepare the foods individually, correct?
Right. Yeah. So one more thought about supplements, and another thing we've been tracking that kind of goes beyond the fresh food brands is consumers making their own food. Even harder to track the actual numbers there, although we know from our research that there's a lot of interest in it. And we've seen some suppliers playing in fresh brands that say, okay, you can go buy the chicken and all the ingredients. We'll provide you with the supplements and the instructions and the sort of the recipes to create a balanced diet. So another opportunity sort of beyond the fresh brands themselves, that are particularly for the supplement makers.
Well, thank you so much, John. That was a very, very insightful. I think it's very interesting how the consumer really drives a lot of those markets, niches and so on. So a lot to learn. Usually, I like to always end up with a more personal question or more like your experiences. So what drives you? Like, why, you know, you said you started in marketing, writing English major, you know, how to come into the pet food, and what drives you, and what is your really motivation for the future that you really would like to change in the future?
Oh, gosh. Writing about pet food kind of brings strong interests together because I enjoy writing. And as a family, we've always had multiple pets, although we're down to just a dog now that's my constant companion. So I'm enjoying bringing those two aspects of my life together. It seems like sort of a luxury to be able to do that. So I'm really enjoying that.
Great. And you're cooking for your dog yourself?
No.
Perfect. Good. Okay. Thank you so much. So that concludes another episode of the Pet Food Science Podcast brought to you by Wisenetics. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast to stay updated on future episodes. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please leave us a review. Your feedback is very invaluable to us. Until next time, this is Jan Sugodolski signing off from the Pet Food Science Podcast. Bye-bye.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with elite remote talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.